come now to oral questions. Can I just refer members to the particular standing order, which I don't have in front of me. I did, but I haven't got it with me at the moment. That makes it clear that it's the Speaker's discretion to grant supplementary questions. And while we have a sort of a roster, that roster falls within the discretion of the Speaker. And I'm just told that it's Standing Order 397. I just offer that because of the nature of some of the questions that I've spoken of before on the sheet today. First question, oral question of the day, I call Mark Cameron.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Associate Minister for the Environment. What announcements has he made recently regarding reducing the regulatory burden on primary industries?
Well, on the honourable.
Ahoy, Mr. Speaker.
Hogar.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With my two-eyed colleagues, the Minister of Agriculture and the Minister for RMA Reform, I announce that the government will introduce legislation to remove the low-slope map from stock exclusion regulations and repeal winter grazing regulations. These targeted changes are part of an important part of the Coalition's commitment to allow farmers to get back to farming without unnecessary red tape. We are working hard on better ways for farmers to manage environmental impacts through freshwater farm plans.
Supplementary. How will these proposed changes help farmers?
Thank you. For stock exclusion, the existing rules have a map that identifies low-slope land where beef cattle and deer will have to be fenced off from water bodies. This slow slope map has proven problematic, creates a huge expense for some farmers with minimal practical or environmental benefits. This is why we are removing it. We're also proposing to remove the conditions for winter grazing and regulation while still requiring practical steps to be taken to minimise effects on fresh water. There has already been significant improvement in winter grazing practice, supported by sector groups and local councils.
Mark Cameron.
Supplementary. What is the Minister working on to let farmers get back to farming productively and sustainably?
As a priority, we're working on improvements to freshwater farm plans to make them less costly and complex for farmers. We know farm plans are a good idea. They allow farmers to find the right solutions for their farm and their catchment, but they don't need to be as onerous as the system that was introduced by the previous government. That's why we will shift to an approach that matches risk with cost.
Supplementary. How does this align with the proposed changes to stock exclusion and winter grazing?
We are working on an enduring and robust farm plan system that councils and communities can rely on, where practical on-farm solutions can stand as an alternative for a range of local rules and consents. This will help avoid the need for blunt national regulations. I believe that good quality farm plans that don't cost the earth can be a practical solution for identifying and managing a range of environmental impacts.
Supplementary, the Honourable Damien O'Connor.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Has the Minister read the New Zealand EU Free Trade Agreement that includes legally binding provisions to, quote, to provide for a high level of environmental protection and continue to improve environmental protections, and, quote, not to weaken, reduce, waive or otherwise derogate from environmental laws to encourage trade or investment? If so, what does he think?
Well, I have read the EU New Zealand FTA agreement, and what I would say is I had a really great presentation last week showing the difference in water quality between New Zealand and the EU, which showed we are miles ahead of many areas in our water quality than the EU.
Question number two, in the name of the Right Honourable Chris Hipkins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Prime Minister, does he stand by all of his government statements and actions?
Yes, I do, and especially our announcement of a $1.9 billion investment in corrections in Budget 2024 so that we can keep New Zealanders safe and we can restore law and order. Budget 2024 will invest an extra 810-bed extension at Waikaria Prison. It will deliver 685 new frontline staff. It will increase pay for staff and it will extend rehabilitation programs for prisoners. And this comes alongside our wider plan to restore law and order, which is about backing police to go after criminal gangs, getting more officers on the beat, speeding up court processes, restoring three strikes legislation, establishing youth military academies and a youth serious offender category, and capping sentence reductions. We are going to be restoring law and order, unlike this last government, and we're going to get New Zealand back on track.
Supplementary question. Was he aware before his press conference yesterday that the $1.9 billion he was announcing for Waikaria Prison included both operational and capital spending? If so, why did he say at the press conference that it was all operating expenditure?
Oh, as I said to you, I'm very proud of the $1.9 billion investment we announced yesterday. As I said, we had a bit of a mix-up in communication yesterday. We clarified it very quickly, and importantly, we are adding another 810 beds to Waikaria Prison. We are making sure we have almost 700 new corrections frontline staff. They'll be paid well, and we're making sure that we can actually get tough on law and order.
Supplementary question. How much of the $1.9 billion announced yesterday is capital expenditure and how much is operating expenditure?
Again, in that budget, there is enough to be able to do capital expenditure for expanding for the prison. Importantly, there is operating expenditure to make sure that we can pay our staff and hire more corrections officers.
Point of order, Mr Speaker.
A point of order, right Honourable Chris Hipkins.
The question was pretty straightforward. How much of it was capital spend? How much was operating expenditure? The Prime Minister indicated in his answer to the previous question that he did know the difference between the two and he did know what it was. I'm asking him what it was.
I just say to that member, he well knows it's about budget sensitivity. He'll find out on May 30th.
Is the announcement that he made yesterday budget sensitive? If so, why has he announced it?
And the other thing I would add to the member is, though, that as I said yesterday, there is commercial sensitivity about two elements of that budget. One is around Waikaria Prison and the build and construction costs, and the second piece is around the labour negotiations for staff pay increases.
Supplementary.
Supplementary, that right on the precipice.
How is revealing the...
It does work like that. A point of order, the right Honourable Winston Peters.
My former colleague Steve Mahari wrote a very good article the other day, and I suggest that we all read it again, because I agree with him. My point is that when you've had your first five questions, it goes to the other side well before that. That was the old rule. It should be the rule now.
Yeah, well, everything moves on, as you know. Right Honourable Chris Hipkins.
So, Mr Speaker, what is commercially sensitive about releasing the breakdown of capital and operating expenditure from yesterday's announcement?
What I said to the member is what is commercially sensitive is the build and the extension of Waikaria Prison.
Right on to Winston Peters.
Thank you very much, Mr Speaker.
No problem.
Can I ask the Prime Minister as to whether the new 800 extra prison beds announced yesterday means that the old fishing policy of catch and release is over?
Well, absolutely. What is over is actually a government that has been soft on crime. We have a government that is going to make sure we restore law and order.
Point of order.
Several things, Mr Speaker, but the first is the point of order that Winston Peters raised before was completely out of order. I'm surprised that you didn't chastise him for that. But the second is that question is also completely out of order. The question that he's asked is also completely out of order. It certainly wouldn't be able to be authenticated.
Well, I'm surprised that you think I should be, that you are surprised, and surprised further that you thought that even raising the surprise that you have was a point of order. But in the end, we do try to keep things flowing as much as we possibly can. I don't want to do anything that disrupts from the members' intense questioning of the government. You got another? Honourable Chris Hipkins.
What will the annual operating cost of housing 810 additional prisoners be, and was that cost included in the $1.9 billion that he announced yesterday?
Look, I just think it's quite outrageous that this member is talking about law and order. Do you remember what happened in the last government? 51% growth in gangs, 33% growth in violent crime, doubling of ram raids, quadrupling of ram raids, doubling of retail crime. You had 6 years to fix it, you didn't do a thing.
Point of order, Mr Speaker.
Well, a point of order, right on Chris Hipkins.
I wonder whether you'll allow me to repeat the question, seeing as I think the Prime Minister might have missed what the question actually was.
Well, one of the interesting things is I note is that when the person answering the question answers, it's quite audible on the coverage that goes out. But it was not audible when the Prime Minister was answering because of the noise that was coming largely from the members' colleagues. So by all means, ask it again and we'll hear the answer in silence.
What will the additional annual operating cost of housing 810 additional prisoners be, and was that cost included in the $1.9 billion that he announced yesterday?
Yes, and what I'd say to you is we have a package of package to support corrections to make sure that we restore law and order in this country. We are not going to tolerate rising crime like we saw under your previous administration.
Supplementary.
Supplementary, Chloe Swarbrick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Does the Prime Minister agree with National Party leader Christopher Luxon, who during the 2023 election said that New Zealanders who take MDMA are not criminals?
Again, what I'd say to you, we are focused on making sure we restore law and order in this country. We have a series of package of policies to do that. We are making sure that we are going to get tough on law and order. We've got three strikes legislation coming back. We've got gang law going through this House. We're making sure that we're going after serious young offending.
Point of order.
That didn't even come close to addressing the question, which is about whether there should be criminalisation applied to New Zealanders who are consuming illicit substances.
No, with respect, that was not the question. The question was, did he agree with a statement made by a person who was not a minister at the time, and therefore almost didn't stand? Move now to question
supplementary question, Mr. Speaker.
Right on with Chris Hipkins.
Does he consider people who answer 111 calls to be frontline staff?
Again, it's about making sure that we can deliver for New Zealanders and improve crime outcomes. We want to see lower levels of crime in this country. We're making sure that all of our agencies are focused on 20,000 less violent criminals in this country. We want to see a 15% reduction in serious young offending. We're focused on the outcomes. They'll get organised to make sure we deliver those outcomes.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker. The government have made a distinction between frontline staff and back office staff and have said they won't be cutting any frontline staff. The question that I asked him is pretty straightforward, whether he regards 111 call centre operators as frontline staff. He didn't even address or even come anywhere near the question.
Well, I think he came very, very, very near the question. But the point is, I just point out that it's not reasonable to use the point of order process to try and extract an answer that is suitable or acceptable to the person asking the question. But in this case, I will ask the Prime Minister to make another attempt at that question.
I expect there will be sufficient resources to man a 111 line.
Good answer.
Supplementary question, Mr. Speaker. Does he consider the people who man the 111 line to be frontline staff?
Again, that'll be a decision ultimately operationally for the CEOs to make. But what I make sure is that we'll have frontline services protected.
Very good answer. Excellent answer.
Question number three, in the name of Suze Redmayne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Finance. Has she seen any recent reports on the economy?
Well, Mr. Speaker, yes. Every 2 years, the OECD reports on the economic situation and policies of each member country. The latest report on New Zealand was released yesterday. As well as the usual commentary on economic and fiscal policy, the report looks at three structural issues: competition policy, climate change, and improving educational performance in schools. I would encourage members to read the report. It is particularly good in describing what has happened in the economy over recent years, and it brings cross-country expertise to important policy areas.
Supplementary, what does the OECD say about New Zealand's fiscal situation?
Mr. Speaker, the OECD report talks a lot about the current fiscal position and how this has come about. It says, and I quote, "The pandemic and spending overruns led to a permanent increase in the government spending to GDP ratio, resulting in a substantial deterioration of New Zealand's fiscal position." It says that public debt is rising, government spending has been higher than planned, and that the discretionary increase in spending in the 2023 budget, quote, "worked against monetary policy efforts to reduce inflation," quote.
Does the OEC describe how those overruns happened?
Mr. Speaker, yes. The OECD report says that expenditure slippage, to use the OECD term, arose in two main ways. First, from 2021 onwards, the government set relatively high operating allowances in advance of its budgets. And second, when it came to the budget itself, the actual amount of spending was higher still. This is borne out by the relevant budget documents. For example, the operating allowance for budget 2023 was originally set at $2.6 billion, then was successively raised to $2.7 billion, $4 billion, and finally $4.5 billion. The actual new spending in budget 2023 was $4.8 billion. That, Mr Speaker, is how spending overruns happen.
What is the OECD's advice on addressing these fiscal issues?
Mr Speaker, the OECD says, and I quote again, "It is important that the government continues to steadily reduce the fiscal deficit as planned, to limit the rise in public debt and thereby increase the fiscal buffer available for the next negative shock." Quote, and members are clearly very interested in this, so they should listen up. On the revenue side, any tax cuts should be fully funded by offsetting revenue or expenditure measures. We've not shared any details of the budget with the OECD, Mr Speaker, but it is safe to say that after the 30th of May, they will find that the budget is entirely consistent with this advice.
Question number four, in the name of the Honourable Marama Davidson.
Thank you to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by all his government statements and actions?
Yes, and especially last week's announcement that beginning in Term 1 2025, all state schools will be teaching reading using the proven structured literacy approach. Because currently only 56% of our Year 8 students are at the expected level for reading and writing, and that is unacceptable. All part of our plan to improve educational outcomes so young Kiwis gain the skills that they need to succeed.
Unlearn if you can't eat.
Does he agree with the New Zealand Law Society that his government's fast-track bill, quote, creates a potential for decision-making that is not objective or independent, and a risk that the joint ministers will be subjected to lobbying or other attempts to influence their decision-making?
Look, as you well know, the Minister of Infrastructure has said this, but it's through a select committee process, open for any sensible ideas to improve the legislation. But again, we are going to build things in this country.
Does he agree with submitters such as the New Zealand Planning Institute, who said the current fast-track legislation, quote, risks overloading the system and slowing it down, contrary to the intent of creating a fast process?
No, the complete opposite's going to happen. We are going to speed up the building of infrastructure in this country. And I seriously hope that I get the support of the Greens for this legislation, because if you want serious delivery on our climate change goals, we need to build renewable energy projects much faster. Faster consenting, the better that is for everybody.
Is he concerned that by failing to put a list of projects approved for fast-tracking at select committee, his government is not being transparent or democratic domestically, let alone upholding the commitments and international agreements to, quote, promote transparency in government decision-making?
Well, that's a very long question from that member, but what I would say is that the legislation is before a select committee, and importantly, as you've heard from the minister, he's very comfortable with taking on feedback from that process.
Is he concerned that 7 out of 8 regional councils who submitted on the bill oppose it in its current form?
No, we are going to build things in this country. We have to get things done. It does not need to take 8 years to consent an onshore wind farm in this country. It can take 1 year. We can build it in 2, and we can get the climate change benefits of it. That's why I look forward to that member's support as the leader of the Green Party to support this legislation.
Will the Prime Minister allow public scrutiny of the list of projects intended for fast-tracking at select committee, given the multitude of concerns raised about environmental protections, lack of transparency, executive oversight, free trade agreements and the 27,000 submissions on the bill?
Well, this legislation, as I've been explaining to the member, is about accelerating towards our climate change goals and commitments. This is enabling us to build more renewable energy. That surely is a good thing. That is what I would expect that member to be supporting.
Question number 5, in the name of Dan Bedwell.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. To the Minister of Local Government, what recent announcements has he made about a financially sustainable model for water in Auckland?
Mr Speaker.
The Honourable Simeon Brown.
On Sunday, I joined Prime Minister Christopher Luxon and Auckland Mayor Wayne Brown to announce that the government has delivered on our election promise to provide a financially sustainable water services model for Auckland under our Local Water Done Well plan. Yeah. Our plan was unanimously endorsed by Auckland Council's governing body, and WaterCare's more financially sustainable model will ensure water rates for Aucklanders remain affordable both now and into the future.
Supplementary. What do these changes mean for Auckland ratepayers?
Well, good news, Mr Speaker. Under the Local Water Done Well solution we announced on Sunday, Aucklanders will avoid the 25.8% water rate hike previously proposed by WaterCare. $1.2 billion was spent over the last 6 years by the last government of water reform, which took away local control and was divisive. But in 6 months, our government has avoided these significant water rate increases.
Supplementary. How does this fit into the government's plan to keep water assets in local control?
Well, Mr Speaker, good news. Our government recognises the importance of local decision-making and local ownership of water infrastructure. As part of our 100-day plan, we scrapped Three Waters to restore council ownership and council control of water assets. And in 6 months, we have delivered our first Local Water Done Well deal, a sustainable financial model for Auckland that will keep water assets in local control.
Supplementary, Mr Speaker. And what reports has he seen on water reform in Auckland?
Well, Mr Speaker, I've seen reports that over the last 6 years, $1.2 billion was spent on water reform plans that would take away control of water assets from local councils. Some said that our government's Local Water Done Well plan would not work. But in just 6 months, we have delivered a financially sustainable water services model for Auckland, and we spent only $300,000 on that.
Question number 6, in the name of the Honourable Barbara Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. To the Minister of Finance, does she stand by her statement that, quote, tax reductions will be funded by reprioritisation, savings and new revenue measures, unquote, and is she committed to delivering a meaningful tax cuts as outlined in the National Act and National New Zealand First Coalition agreements?
Mr Speaker, yes and yes. And the fact that tax reductions will be funded by reprioritisation, savings and new revenue measures means that tax relief in the budget will be fiscally neutral. The government has decided to reprioritise lower impact spending to give a modest amount of tax relief to people and families who have been paying more and more of their wages in tax over the last 14 years. Our tax package will be responsible, and I look forward to when that member explains to working people why they should be yet again denied the opportunity to keep more of their own hard-earned money.
Supplementary. What national assets, if any, will she sell to pay for the tax cuts?
None.
Supplementary. Can she commit to no changes to the government contribution to KiwiSaver to pay for her tax cuts?
Yes.
Supplementary. Is she committed to the changes to the independent earner tax credit as outlined in the coalition agreements for Budget 2024?
Oh, well, Mr Speaker, now we're getting exciting questions because the member clearly wants to know the detail of the tax relief that we will be delivering on Budget Day. And I'm sad to say that just like everyone else, she will have to wait until the 30th of May, and gosh, it's going to be good.
Supplementary. Can the average earner expect to be $50 better off as per the coalition agreements, or $10 to $20 per week better off, as announced by David Seymour last week in the media?
Only 22 sleeps to go, Mr Speaker, and I tell this to every worker listening to Question Time today, you will get precisely $0 of tax relief from a Labor-led government, and from our government you'll be getting a lot more than that.
Supplementary. Is it responsible fiscal management to continue with her tax cuts when her budget policy statement shows tax revenue will be down $13.9 billion over the forecast period, and she has confirmed she will be borrowing for everyday costs? If so, what economists support her tax cuts in the current economic climate?
Mr Speaker, in answer to the first part of the question, yes. And what a mess we have been left. I would just invite the member opposite to consider the counterfactual. So if the counterfactual was to have a $3.5 billion operating allowance and spend it, as was her party's stated alternative, then our budget package, including tax relief for working people, requires less borrowing.
Question number 7, in the name of Grant McCallum.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Education.
No, just wait a minute. Just wait a minute.
How many of you politicians listen to the taxpayer? There's a huge difference. Learn that. Messenger RNA of 2021.
Grant McCallum.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Education asks, what recent announcements has she made about improving the way New Zealand children learn to read?
Mr Speaker.
The Honourable Erica Stanford.
Thank you, Mr Speaker. Last week I announced that beginning Term 1 2025, all children in state primary schools will learn to read using structured literacy approaches. Structured literacy gives children the foundational skills they need to master reading, starting with sounds and phonics to decode words and fundamentally based on explicit teaching of material with a clear sequence. We are putting $67 million from Budget 24 in to ensure that teachers are supported by this approach and schools have the resources and supports they need to transform how our kids are learning to read, both in English and Te Reo Māori. This announcement, together with the cell phone ban and the hour a day policy, is just the start of our plan to put achievement back at the heart of our education system so our kids get a world-leading education.
Supplementary. What feedback has she seen about this announcement?
Well, Mr Speaker, I've received strong support, overwhelmingly strong support from the sector, from a board chairman. I love your enthusiasm for proper structured learning and especially for doing something decent and long-term to fix the atrocious state of reading and writing. From a principal, great news from a secondary perspective. I'm very excited about this change and look forward to seeing the results coming through in a few years to us. From a junior school team leader, thank you so much for your strong statement on structured literacy. This would have to be the best news I've ever heard in my 20-year-long career to date. Follow the neuroscience, not the theories. I'm so pleased that a government is finally putting their foot down and standing by what works for all children.
Supplementary. What evidence does she have to support the need for structured literacy in New Zealand schools?
Well, Mr Speaker, just yesterday, the OECD Economic Survey of New Zealand 2024 made recommendations for a clearer curriculum, something I'm pleased to say this government is already actioning. It also makes the following statement. Teachers are overly reliant on reading recovery that fails to improve learning outcomes for a significant minority of children and recommends that the government continue to expand support to alternative interventions, including structured literacy. This is a government of action. Funding for reading recovery will be repurposed directly into the front line, resourcing schools to provide small group and one-on-one structured approaches to literacy. So our structured literacy approach will be consistently delivered.
Supplementary. Why is change urgently needed to transform the way New Zealand children learn to read?
Mr Speaker, recent data shows that just 56% of Year 8 students are at the expected level for reading and 35% for writing. The recent OECD report stated that an important reason why turning around a trend decline in New Zealand school education performance, including in literacy and numeracy and increasing education outcomes, is key to ensuring the future performance of the economy and the well-being of all New Zealanders. Mr Speaker, I could not agree more. This government has set an ambitious target to get at least 80% of Year 8 students to curriculum by 2030. Learning to read will ensure our children can achieve success in education and life. Teaching using structured literacy approaches are a critical part of how we get there.
Question number 8, in the name of Debbie Naruwa-Packer.
A tēnā koe te pika.
Hang on a minute. Just wait a minute. That member needs to remember that we don't talk while someone else is asking a question. Something I thought a school teacher might know a lot about.
Tēnā koe.
Tēnā rewa paka.
Kia ora. Tēnā koe te pika. My question is to the Prime Minister. Does he stand by his government statements and actions?
Yes, in the context they were given.
My supplementary, please, is what assurances can he give to iwi like Ngāti Toa Rangatira, whose stream and harbour have been poisoned by raw sewage waste as a result of unrestrained development, that fast-track legislation will not lead to a repeat of this situation as they're experiencing in the Erohe?
Well, as I've answered before, the legislation is before Select Committee. Our submissions are being taken. The Minister of Infrastructure is open for any considerations that come through that process, but we are going to get things built in this country.
Supplementary. What qualifies a fast-track project as having significant regional or national benefits, and how are these economic benefits weighted against environmental costs?
Well, again, what I'd say to the member is, as she well knows, the legislation is before Select Committee. It is being worked through. We're opening it up to public submissions. But we are going to make sure that we balance economic considerations, environmental considerations, social considerations, but we are going to get things built.
Supplementary. What diplomatic pressure will he apply to Israel after their refusal to accept terms of a ceasefire today and their continued attack on the civilians at Rafah?
Well, again, we have been very strident in our urging that we do not want Israel moving into Rafah. What we have seen today is something that we do not support. But what I'd say is that we have a moment in time to make sure that Hamas and Israel get round a table and actually put peace in this process.
Supplementary. Will he support the United Nations call for an independent international investigation into the mass graves containing hundreds of bodies at two hospitals in Gaza which show evidence of the mass execution and torture of Palestinian civilians?
Again, what we want is a focus in the world for Hamas to release hostages. We want Israel to give unimpeded access for humanitarian assistance, and we want both parties to get round the table so that a peace process can commence, because military action isn't going to solve anything.
Supplementary, the Honourable David Parker.
Did I hear the Prime Minister correctly saying that he thinks that Israel should be negotiating with Hamas rather than Palestine?
What I said was it's important that both parties get round the table, put themselves into the peace process and actually resolve this thing diplomatically. That's the only way it's going to get resolved.
The Honourable... Rauri Waititi.
You are definitely not only a speaker but a prophet. How will the addition... My question to the Prime Minister supplementary. How will the addition of 110 new prison beds impact Māori, given that Māori are 37% of the people proceeded by against police, 45% of the people convicted, and 52% of the people in prison?
What I'd just say to that member... come on stream next year, and there is a further 810 beds to be added under the announcement from yesterday. That will lead to over 1,800 beds at Waikaria Prison. We are determined in this country to make sure that we are going to lower crime. It is unacceptable, and I don't care which ethnicity you're from. If you want to commit a crime, you will actually do the time.
Supplementary. What measures are being taken to ensure that the increased capacity will not lead to overcrowding or compromise the well-being of inmates?
Well, under the previous administration, the only goal on law and order was a reduction in the prison population. We are focused on reducing crime, violent crime, retail crime, ram raids, serious crime. That's what we're focused on. And as a result, we will continue to expand prison capacity if we need it. But at this point in time, our focus is on making sure we expand that capacity, add more corrections frontline service officers, and make sure that we actually support and get law and order restored in this country.
Brian Nicholls, time.
The Honourable David Seymour.
Can the Prime Minister confirm that, regrettably, Māori are more often victims of crime? And unlike this line of questioning he's just been addressing, our coalition government is focused on the Māori victims of crime before we worry about the welfare of criminals. And actually that goes to people of all ethnic backgrounds.
I couldn't agree further. The reality is that Māori are disproportionately victims of crime. That is why we are lowering crime rates in this country. That's what we are obsessed about. That's what we're going to do so that people feel safe, whether they're Māori or non-Māori. That's important.
Rawari Waititi. Who is the most incarcerated peoples here in Aotearoa?
Māori are sadly overrepresented in the prison population, but they're also overrepresented as victims of crime too.
Somebody question.
The Right Honourable Winston Peters.
Isn't it a fact that half of the people that claim to be Māori in prison are less than half Māori?
You can't know that. We'll move on to question number nine, the name of Jenny Anderson. Just wait for the House to calm itself down. Yeah, Mr. Jackson, just give your colleague a bit of space here.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Police. Does he stand by all his statements and actions?
Honourable Mark Mitchell.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Yes.
Does he stand by his statement? This government is determined to put public safety back at the heart of the criminal justice system. If so, has the number of victimisations from incidents using a stabbing or cutting weapon in the Auckland City Police District increased by 32% since he has taken office?
Well, Mr. Speaker, absolutely we stand by that statement because we've come off the back of 6 years of a soft on crime government. And we're having to fix and repair the enormous amount of damage that they did. In terms of the Auckland CBD, we have increased by over 50% the amount of beat patrols and foot patrols now. There is early signs that crime in the Auckland CBD is starting to reduce, and we're going to continue to be focused on this work.
Are the number of victimisations from incidents involving a stabbing or cutting weapon in the Waitematā Police District up by 25% since he took office?
Well, again, Mr. Speaker, I'd say that this government inherited a situation where we've got massive violent crime that we're now having to get on top of and start to reduce. When it comes to knife crime, I have spoken to police and I've asked for advice on that because we've seen in the UK a massive increase in knife crime. We're now seeing in Australia an increased use of knife crime, and this is probably going to arrive on our shores too, and this government's going to get ahead of the problem and make sure that we actually deal with it.
Does he agree with the Prime Minister that it is for the Chief Executive or the Commissioner of Police to determine if police communicators who answer 111 calls are frontline or not?
Yes, I do agree with the Prime Minister because just about every day he's committed to making sure that we've got a safer country and that we're moving in the right direction. In terms of 111 operators, I would define a frontline police officer myself as a sworn police officer, and I would say that the 111 operator's job is no less important in terms of public safety, but it is there to support those frontline police officers in their job.
Mr. Speaker, I'm not clear. Point of order.
Why are you talking?
Point of order.
Point of order.
Mr. Speaker, he said he agreed with the Prime Minister that it's for the Chief Executive or the Commissioner of Police to determine, but then he gave his own reckons that it was actually a sworn officer, so I'm unclear as to what was the answer to my question.
Yeah, but I'm not. So, next question.
Does he stand by his answer to written parliamentary question 8217 that, in fact, police communicators who answer 111 calls are not frontline?
Well, again, I would say that my determination is I view a frontline police officer as a sworn member of police, and I view the incredibly important job that communicators and 111 call takers do as being critically important, but they're there to support our sworn frontline police officers.
Question, is this a supplementary or a new one?
No. New line of question.
Question number 10, Chloe Swilbrick.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Prime Minister, does he stand by all of his government's statements and actions?
Yes, and especially our announcement on the weekend which will save Aucklanders, including those in that member's electorate, from a predicted rates increase of 26%. We promised to repeal and replace Labor's disastrous three waters model, and we are. The previous government's divisive, ineffective approach wasted 1.2 $2 billion and achieved absolutely nothing. In just 6 months, we've delivered for Auckland and Aucklanders. Local water done well is going to deliver better water services.
Does he agree with the OECD's findings, some of which his Minister of Finance was just referring to, that, I quote, New Zealand's tax settings remain an outlier internationally, end quote, and that shares, land and owner-occupied residential property are tax-favoured?
What I would say is I agree with some of what the OECD says. I disagree with other things that they say.
What did the OECD get wrong then with their analysis that New Zealand's tax settings remain an outlier internationally and that shares, land and owner-occupied residential property are tax-favoured?
What I would say is what they got right is that we need to invest more in education, we need to invest more in competition and deregulation, we need to make sure that we're investing in science, technology, innovation and international trade and investment.
Does the Prime Minister agree that our tax settings incentivise property speculation and disincentivise productivity, or does he disagree with the Treasury, the IMF, the OECD and pretty much every credible economist in the country?
Look, what I agree with is that low and middle income working New Zealanders, the very people that the Labor Party and the Green Party used to profess they cared about, actually deserve tax relief. It's been 14 long years, there's been a 40% growth in inflation, and they're going to get it at this budget.
What does he say to those low and middle income earners who can see in this OECD report that shares, land and owner-occupied residential property are tax-favoured under his government's tax settings?
Again, as I said, we are not supporting a capital gains tax. That is period. We're not doing that.
Question. Number 11, Member James Meagher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To the Minister of Corrections, what recent announcements has he made about investment in corrections?
Mr. Speaker.
The Honourable Mark Mitchell.
Thank you. Yesterday I announced...
Well, just say, wait
Mr.
on.
Speaker.
Yeah, wait, just let him at least start the answer before the barracking begins.
Mr. Speaker, yesterday I announced a key part of this government's plan to crack down on crime and restore law and order. Alongside the Prime Minister, I announced $1.9 billion of investment in corrections to meet their workforce requirements for a growing prison population, as well as capital investment to build a new 810-bed facility at Waikerea Prison. The funding will meet the current shortfall left by the previous government, which has meant that corrections is housing an additional 1,100 prisoners on top of what they're budgeted for. Not only are we meeting the shortfall, we are funding headroom on top of that. It means that corrections will be staffed to house 10,000 prisoners at any given time. It gives the system capacity to take violent, repeat offenders off the street. The new build at Waikerea will comprise three units with an additional 810 beds. This is on top of the 500 beds opening in the middle of next year. This announcement will take Waikerea's total capacity when complete to 1,865 prisoners, making it New Zealand's largest prison. The previous government had a target to empty prisons. No government wants to see a skyrocketing prison population, but the only way that you can achieve a reduction...
Speaker's rulings are pretty clear that ministers shouldn't really go on once they've answered the question, and this was answered the question a long time ago, and also now we're straying into areas that you yourself have warned ministers about, that it's one thing to make factual statements, it's another thing to make political statements. I ask for a point of order immediately upon that minister making political, not factual, definitely debatable statements.
Yes, that's right. You raise an interesting question, actually, because it is my personal view that some of these questions here today could have been answered with the word yes, and then there would be no supplementaries to follow. But I haven't ruled that way. I would say, can I just ask the Minister to leave out political references that are attacks on the opposition and speak factually about the matters that he's been asked to speak on?
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
A point of order, the Honourable Mark Mitchell.
Can I just seek your guidance on one point? The fact is that the previous government's only target they set for public safety was a reduction of the prison muster by 30%.
Well, settle. Just a minute. We're dealing with a point of order, so please, be quiet.
That might be the minister's view, but it's probably not the public record. So there are other ways to make that statement, and I think that would be it'd be more reasonable for the minister to try and do that. But that question, that answer was extremely long, informative but long. So we have another question on that, James Meagher.
Supplementary. Has he considered the need for rehabilitation of our prisoners?
Mr. Speaker, I have. As part of this announcement, we have announced a total of $78 million for corrections rehabilitation programs. This will deliver FTE resources to rehab services, physical spaces for the rehab to occur, and additional staffing to ensure our prisoners get the rehabilitation services they need to return to society. Since becoming Minister, I've asked Corrections to refocus rehabilitation services on practical skills, helping to develop practical skills like driving and trades.
Are the additional 810 to the Minister of Corrections, sorry, the additional 810 new prison beds part of this government's approach to Māori housing?
Well, this government has clearly said that we're putting public safety at the heart of what we're doing. That means that we anticipate that there probably will be an increase in numbers coming into our correction system, and that's why we made this announcement around capacity. But what we really want to see is we want to see a reduction in that prison muster as we start to get control of the crime in our country.
Can I just remind the House that when it comes to asking questions, ironic expressions are not acceptable. I didn't pull the minute the member up and the minister. I beg your pardon? Now, hang on. Are you going to take a point of order?
Take your hat off, sir.
Mr. Speaker.
Point of order, Rauri Waititi.
The expression was also used in this House that I believe fits in the same explanation that you've just used was the catchphrase tag and release. And there was no, I'm not talking to you.
Sorry.
Catch and release. And that, that I think that's unacceptable also, but it was never pulled up.
Yeah, partly I didn't hear it because of other noise in the House. But just a minute. Yeah, I'm. Yeah, we'll try to deal with this. Just everyone calm down. All I'm saying is that, in general, the standing orders are pretty clear about what can be in a question and what can't be. They're equally clear on what can be in an answer and can't be, but everyone accepts that there is a degree of leniency for the sake of flow in the House. I'm just making that point today so that we don't get into that day after day after day. James Meagher.
Will this announcement increase the number of corrections officers across the network?
Mr. Speaker, yes, it absolutely will. We're funding an additional 685 frontline jobs. This includes 470 corrections officers, increasing both staff and prisoner safety. It will also meet the remuneration requirements that came out of the collective negotiations with the union at the end of last year, as well as funding for future negotiations. This announcement is forward-looking, future-proofing the correction system's capacity, meeting the needs of our frontline staff, and making sure that they have the numbers they need to keep people safe.
James Meagher.
How was this level of spending made possible?
Mr. Speaker, that's a great question. Because if this was the previous government, they would have taxed or borrowed this funding.
We'll stop right there. Thanks very much. Question number 12. Dr. Tracy McClellan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question is to the Minister of Corrections. Does he agree with the Prime Minister that corrections funding announced yesterday was all operating allowance and not capital funding? And if so, does he stand by all of his own statements yesterday?
Well, I stand by the statements that it was a significant announcement that we made yesterday, and it was of a $1.9 billion investment in capital. And, well, if you give me a second, I will answer it. You seem very excited and keen to hear the answer. Why don't you just let me say it? So the $1.9 billion investment in capital and was in capital and operating expenditure for a correction system that has received very little focus or attention from the previous government, whose only public safety target was to reduce the prison muster by 30%.
Point of order, the Honourable Chris Hipkins.
The claim that the Minister keeps repeating, as a Minister, is wrong in fact and could only be interpreted as deliberately misleading the House.
Look, to be honest with you, I didn't hear it said. There was a lot of noise coming from over here. I missed it.
Well, he said it multiple times, that there was only one target of the previous government. Anyone picking up the estimates documents will see that there are dozens of targets for vote corrections and that the claim the minister is making is not true.
And I'd ask the minister to therefore refrain from making that statement.
Point of order, Mr Speaker. In fact, he needs to correct it. He has given misleading and incorrect information to the House repeatedly.
I'm sorry, no, you can't ask for that. And in the end, it is a political exchange in here, and that is part of that. I can only judge the reasonableness of anyone's statements, but it would be unreasonable for me to say that because the opposition says you're wrong, you must apologise or withdraw from it. That wouldn't be the way the place works. Can I please... Tracy McClellan.
Supplementary. What proportion of the funding announced
Sorry, you're probably right, actually. I pulled you up too quick. So the Honourable Kira McAnulty is providing able assistance. Thank you very much. Mark Mitchell, do you want to answer that primary question without the political inferences? The primary question.
Well, I've answered it. I've answered the substantive part of the question.
Everyone's
confused. So...
No.
I stand by the significant announcement that we made yesterday of a $1.9 billion investment in capital and operating expenditure for a correction system that has received very little focus or attention from the previous government.
Point of order.
Mr Speaker, this was a question on notice. There is a higher standard required for those questions. The Minister has not answered or addressed the first part of this question.
Well, I think he has, and so much as the previous question of a similar nature asked by the Leader of the Opposition got the answer from the Prime Minister, which said that those matters are subject to the budget. While the quantum might well be out there, the split of that will clearly be announced when the budget's announced. So I don't think it's an unreasonable answer from the Minister. Dr Tracy McClellan.
Thank you. Supplementary. What proportion of the funding announced is capital expenditure and what proportion is operating expenditure?
Well, like the Prime Minister said, the capital expenditure currently will not be disclosed because there is current negotiations, sensitive negotiations, going on by corrections in terms of the delivery of Wikeria Prison. And it is completely commercially sensitive. And the Leader of the Opposition goes to show just how little he knows in terms of being able to deliver government projects thinks that you should be out in public negotiating the numbers on it.
No, the member, that's right. Dr Tracy McClellan.
Supplementary, what proportion, therefore, of the $1.9 billion of funding he announced yesterday is from the operating allowance?
Well, I've been very clear about... The piece that we can talk directly to is the $78 million that we're putting into rehabilitation programs for prisoners on remand. Anything to do with pay negotiations or commercial negotiations around capital projects on Wikeria is sensitive.
Supplementary.
Dr Tracy McClellan.
When will the Wikeria upgrades he announced yesterday be delivered?
Well, we've said that... That the first 500 will be delivered the middle of next year, and then the additional 810 will be delivered towards the end of 2028.
Supplementary.
Supplementary question from the Honourable Chris Bishop.
Can the Minister confirm that the fiscal approach of the previous government when it came to corrections funding was to believe that all the money came from Treasure Island?
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Sit down.
Supplementary.
I'm going to call the Honourable Nicole McKee, but I've got to say those sort of questions don't help order of the House at all.
To the Minister, does he agree that a well-funded corrections system is essential in supporting this government's new and improved three strikes law, which will take serious violent and sexual offenders off our streets and keep New Zealanders safe?
Yes. You can have a brief response, but the question itself is not anything to do with the primary, and so brief response and then we're over.
Yes, absolutely. I agree with the member. Investing in the capacity and the welfare of the staff and the corrections in our corrections service is completely aligned with what the Three Strikes legislation is achieving to do, hoping to do, and that's public safety.
It was a great answer. Thank you, Dr. McClellan. I meant only a great answer in its brevity. Dr. McClellan.
How much of the $442 million in operational savings is coming from scrapping programs, and how many of these programs are in place to keep corrections staff safe?
Well, the first thing I'd say is that one of my priorities as the incoming minister was to make sure that we started to reduce the amount of assaults on our corrections officers. Who deserve, well, part of the question was around safety of our corrections officers, so I'm going to answer that. You open the door, so I'll answer. So one of my priorities as the incoming minister was around corrections officer safety, because we'd seen an alarming rise under the previous government of assaults on our corrections officer. The good news is that assaults are starting to reduce on corrections officers. In terms of programs, that is a operational decision for corrections. But what I'd say to the member is that while we've got people inside the correction system, we're going to deliver programs that give them meaningful life skills, that gives them the best shot of rejoining society and making a go of it.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker.
Point of order, the Right Honourable Chris Hopkins.
Mr. Speaker, the member asking the question asked him whether any programs that focused on the operational safety of correction staff were being reduced. The overall thrust of the minister's answer, when you get down to it, was that it's an operational matter for corrections. That simply cannot be allowed to stand as an answer in this House. Ministers are accountable for operational matters to the House. It's well codified in Speaker's rulings and in standing orders that you cannot give that as an answer to the House. You might be able to give that as an answer outside the House, but when it comes to operational matters, it is the Minister that is accountable to the House for those issues.
Yeah, but I have heard numerous times in this House ministers say that is an operational matter for which I don't have direct responsibility. So it's kind of one of those areas that I think you could take two different positions on, but I will ask the Honourable Mark Mitchell to perhaps answer the question again.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Well, what I'd say is that my main priority is the safety of our corrections officers, and so my expectation in corrections is that they enhance programs and improve programs to make sure that our corrections officers are safer.
Just before we finish, member can sit there and say that there was still no answer, but when he says his expectation is, that is exactly the relationship between a minister and a chief executive, as the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister, well knows.